Now shall we read together Romans chapter 15. Reading concerning a verse our brother mentioned this afternoon. In verse 19, it's Paul says concerning, so that from Jerusalem and round about unto Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Yea, so have I strived to preach the gospel, not where Christ was named, lest I should build upon another man's foundation. Verse 26, for it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. Verse 30, now I beseech you, brethren, for the Lord Jesus Christ's sake, and for the love of the Spirit, that ye strive together with me in your prayers to God for me, that I may be delivered from them that do not believe in Judea, and that my service which I have for Jerusalem may be accepted of the saints, that I may come unto you with joy by the will of God, and may with you be refreshed. Now shall we pass over to Philippians, the epistle of Paul to the Philippians. And it tells us in chapter 4, the opening verses, reading from verse 2 of Philippians chapter 4, I beseech Evodius and beseech Syntyche, these women, that they be of the same mind in the Lord, and I entreat thee also, true yoke fellow, help these women, those women that he's referred to, which labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and with other my fellow laborers, whose names are in the book of life. Now we'll go to the first chapter in verse 27, and he encourages the Philippian saints, only let your conversation, your behavior be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that ye stand fast in one spirit. Now these are the words, with one mind striving together for the faith of the gospel. And the next book, Colossians chapter 4 and verse 3, gives us similar thoughts, where it says, with all praying also for us, that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds. And our final reading in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 15 and verse 3. Acts of the Apostles, chapter 15 and verse 3. He says, and being brought on their way by the church, this is Luke writing, they passed through Phenas and Samaria, declaring the conversion of the Gentiles. And they caused great joy unto all the brethren. Now the Lord will bless to us the reading of these scriptures because they reach our hearts. They remind us as to why we have what we will call missionary meetings, missionary report meetings, such as this tonight. Firstly, that they're not for publicity, nor for pride in telling of what work may have been done, nor are they for begging, but they're to stimulate prayer and awaken all to action. That's the purpose. And we notice that the scriptures give us a biblical basis. After Paul on his first missionary journey came back to Antioch, we read that he gathered the church together and he related to them what God had done for them in these foreign lands. And now we notice that it's not merely to his home assembly, but as he goes through Phenas and through Samaria, he declares the conversion of the Gentiles. He tells them, he gives them a report of what has been happening in other lands. And you notice its result. they cause great joy unto all the brethren. But we notice that in the other readings, Paul gives reports also in the 15th chapter of the Romans, in writing to the church at Rome. He tells them about the evangelization of Illyricum, which our brother mentioned, the country now of Albania, south of Yugoslavia, between there and Greece. He spoke about the evangelization, not by him, but by the Thessalonian assembly. He said that from them, the gospel had sounded out, not only in their own province, but right south through Macedonia and Achaia. Some of those had accompanied him, undoubtedly, and others, in the spread of the gospel. He mentions the activities of others of his fellow laborers. Paul is one who publicized the activities of the gospel in other parts. And again, I repeat, it was not for pride, nor for mere publicity's sake, nor for begging support. It was to stimulate prayer and also to arouse into personal action, activity in the work of the gospel. And so this is the purpose, really, tonight, of us bringing before all these things. And we notice that Paul stimulated the believers to prayer, making them understand the importance that they had in sharing in the work in which they could not personally engage. Not only is it not God's will that every Christian leaves his work and goes forth to other places to preach, it's not possible, because those that go forth taking nothing of the Gentiles. That means they're not dependent upon their support from the unsaved in working and gaining their daily support. They're dependent upon the Lord and through the instrumentality of the saints. And Paul gave instructions concerning this, and that their giving to the Lord was also associated with their personal investment in the work of the Lord in other parts, in the support of the work of the Lord. And he reminded them of the great necessity of sharing in the work through their prayers. In almost every epistle, Paul appealed to them that they should pray for him. And some would say, well, they needed more the prayers of Paul on their behalf. He did not fail. He prayed for them. But he insisted that he needed their prayer support. We read in these scriptures how that to the Romans in chapter 15, he urged them for their prayer support. And then we read in Colossians also, ye also helping together. They would help in the evangelization in other fields through praying for them. And he realized that they could not pray specifically without being informed, having some knowledge concerning the work. Now, brethren, this is what we need to do this evening to stimulate you in this exercise and this responsibility. It has been most disappointing to see the decrease in missionary interest in this city, when with the good example set by a few brethren who have a real missionary interest in the maintenance of these monthly missionary meetings, the attendance is so small. If it were not for a few individuals that maintain, as it were, the torch aflame, it would die out, because there's a lack of interest. The reason is, brethren and sisters, you have not realized your privilege and responsibility. Your first responsibility is the testimony of the local assembly. But we must realize that if one personally cannot go forth to other lands or other parts of this country where it's impossible to evangelize while you maintain your daily work, then you must be laborers together with them in this work, because they cannot labor alone. The work is cooperative work. And because of this, young people, remember that the Lord has given the commission to go and preach the gospel to make disciples, to see them go on and not leave them alone, to baptize them, to see them gather together. The Acts of the Apostles show us the fulfillment of His command by example. And God desires to touch the hearts of individuals that they may be willing to sacrifice and respond to the call of the Lord. And so, the Lord may be able to call them to equip themselves that they might be workmen fit for the Master's use. The Lord can't call a useless, unexercised young man or young woman. There needs to be the exercise of heart and the divine preparation according to the Scriptures, that thus you may be useful, the Lord can lead you somewhere else. But the thing is, that can only ever be for the comparatively few individuals. But we must remember that the work worldwide depends upon all. This is a cooperative effort. And Paul insists upon this. We notice one example in the Old Testament. The strongest and most capable man that God ever called to fight against the enemies of the Lord and win the battles of the Lord, and this may be a figure of the conquest of the gospel, the most capable was Samson. And he was the most useless. He was the one that accomplished least. Why? Because Samson always is working alone. Every time you see him, it's mentioned that what he did alone. And, well, to me, to tie up these 200 foxes by the tails and set firebrands in, I would say it was impossible for him to do it alone. He must have got some help. But the staggering feature is that the Word of God doesn't mention it. God presents him as a lone worker. And that was one reason, apart from his carnality, that was one reason for not seeing success. Whereas Samuel, I don't think he ever took a sword to go onto the battlefield. But it was Samuel that won the victories of the Lord. Why? Because he stimulated the people of God to get behind the matter and go forth. So this is what we need to learn, brethren and sisters. We do trust that God may not only touch the hearts of young men and young women as to personal responsibility and testimony in their local assembly and outreach from there in the combination in the city and to go forth into other parts, but that you all might realize your responsibility in the question of the work in other fields throughout British Columbia, throughout Canada, the States, and then to the foreign fields, and you need to be informed that you might be stimulated in your exercise to pray and cooperate in this work. The Lord's servants there cannot labor alone. Furthermore, they've learnt that they must not labor alone. They're not lone workers. And they need to be fellow laborers there, and they need the fellowship and support of the saints at home. Now, in referring to examples of this, as regards Venezuela and Colombia, the Venezuelan work, of course, is far more extensive than the work in Costa Rica. But you must not think for this reason it's greater and more important. There's a very simple explanation. Our brother Doug Reed has been laboring 14 years in Costa Rica. He was the first of assembly workers to go there. But the work in Venezuela is approaching its century of activity. The first missionary from assemblies was John Bright, who was went there in 1890. And then there was a group. He was only there for a few years before he transferred to Mexico. But there were other workers that went before the turn of the century, and assembly was planted in Caracas and in Valencia especially, including one that went forth commanded from the Spanish assemblies, Urigaro, and an assembly was planted in Valencia about 1898, 1899, and John Brown was there. It was through John Brown that Mr. Williams, he was from Toronto, and was through him giving a mission report that Mr. Williams was stirred up to go to Venezuela in 1910. And most people here think that Mr. Williams established the work in Venezuela. But he went there through another missionary that was a Canadian missionary from Assemblies in Toronto. But they've been working for so many years. We who have gone in more recent years, of course, are only laborers together with them. And the reason is that today there are about 95 assemblies in Venezuela. Is because the country is bigger, yes, there are about 15 million, far bigger than Costa Rica, but secondly, because the work is older. And thank God that great things have been done in Costa Rica in the little time that they've been laboring there. And perhaps, too, that generally speaking, Venezuela is not so Roman Catholic. The state where we have lived over the last 6 years is the most Roman Catholic state in Venezuela, where Rome still dominates. When the priest went to Venezuela, he visited the two biggest cities and Merida. And our state of Merida is much like Costa Rica, where you can only ever get just a handful in under the sound of the gospel. But it is by consistent plodding activity that God brings the fruit. And so even there, the assembly we saw formed in 1976 has grown now, and there are about 70 in fellowship. So that the work has grown in Venezuela. But let us consider the spiritual reasons. First of all, because there was a good foundation laid. The brethren that went there, of course, were desirous, like Paul, of going not to build upon another foundation. And Paul said concerning Corinth that he had laid the foundation. That is humanly speaking. He said other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. But as the human instrument, Paul was that in Corinth. And some of these brethren, like Mr. Williams, Mr. Sayward, have been divine instruments in planting assemblies 50, 60 years ago in Venezuela. A good foundation was laid. And when Paul spoke of laying the foundation, he said, another buildeth thereon. So we have been privileged to build upon other men's foundations, but you can't build a good superstructure if there's not a good foundation. So undoubtedly the progress and development of assemblies are associated firstly with a good foundation there. So remember, learn from this, brethren and sisters, to be sure to see a good foundation laid in all new assembly activity. A good foundation. Stick to the scriptures, its principles, and its patterns. And then secondly, not only the good foundation, but good yoke service. Now, we read here in Philippians concerning this. Paul spoke of this one as a true yoke fellow. It's interesting to see, you students, get your books and look up these words. It's most interesting, and the study is most profitable. He uses this word, it's only used once, true yoke fellow. That comes from the actual word yoke of two oxen that we see constantly in Venezuela under the one wooden yoke, and they're laboring together. He called his brother a true yoke fellow. He was under the yoke with Paul. They labor together. And of course, that's a picture of true fellowship, of pulling together. Well, we thank God for this in Venezuela. All of the Lord's servants at present in Venezuela, we're all true yoke fellows. We labor together in perfect harmony and fellowship. There are at present only 7 missionaries in active service in Venezuela. And of these, there's usually one or two absent on furlough. Now, there are 3 from Canada, 5 or 6 from Ireland, and myself from Australia, who are commended workers still living in regard to Venezuela. But you must remember that Mr. John Wells has been in Ireland for many, many years, has visited over the last 20, 30 years just on brief visits. Mr. Fairfield is now back in Ireland, and we just wonder if he'll ever be able to return to Venezuela. Mr. Sayward, our veteran worker, is 93 years of age, and we can't expect great things of him, though he desires to be the faithful soldier that dies with the harness on. And though physically he's deteriorating, and mentally also, and loss of memory, gets confused in his messages, nevertheless, my son Edward, who just came from Venezuela yesterday, informs me that the tent has been up in Valencia And for 5 weeks he'd been helping in the preaching of the gospel there in a tent effort. 93 years of age. And he's the man that's stirred up the Venezuelans to be pioneers. And of course your words are useless unless you're demonstrated by example. But thank God his words are with power because he's been an example in his life. So that we can't count on these men for the future. So that it really leaves John Frith and Bruce Cumming from here and the four other younger Irish workers with myself as the more able-bodied foreign workers, seven. And then thank God for the Venezuelan. There are 13 Venezuelan brethren now raised up, committed to the work of the Lord from these Venezuelan assemblies. And we thank God for these because they're true yoke fellows, as Paul says. We are one-minded with each one of them. There's harmony in labors. This is a great strength for the building up of assembly testimony. But then in Colossians 4, it not only speaks of this good yoke service of those that were laborers, but then it speaks of good cooperation. Because it uses the word fellow laborers, and it speaks of them of laboring together. And one of the words used here is like a workman, a fellow workman. And then the other word is the word that's used also in Philippians 1 and 27, that they were striving together for the faith of the gospel. Striving together for the faith of the gospel. And this is the same word of an athlete of which we were studying in Hebrews chapter 12. This was the athlete in the team race. That's the thought of being athletes together. They're striving together, in the other case, agonizing together. Ah, we thank God for this support in the brethren and sisters of the local assemblies. That's the important thing. Paul had showed the example, and they were followers. And we thank God now that we can speak of this in Caracas, firstly, as an example. This support, the cooperation. Paul spoke of these two sisters that had been helpers, laborers, in the evangelization, the work together. They were not preachers. Paul had condemned that. But he recognized the invaluable help of their personal activities, their labors together with him and the others, just as Aquila and Priscilla. Thank God for our sisters that are laborers together with us. This is stimulated in Caracas. In Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, about 3 million people. There are six assemblies. One of them has about 250 in fellowship, another about 120, 150 in fellowship. There'll be 600 or 700 in fellowship in Caracas. Now these six assemblies are in, not only in nominal fellowship, they're in practical fellowship. Now they've arranged amongst themselves evangelistic efforts in door-to-door work. In other words, on Saturdays they have this combined door-to-door efforts. Now they started first in the assembly in El Valle. And they had a gathering together of brethren and sisters from all the assemblies to arrange what to do and get out maps and so forth, and then on have prayer, and then on Saturday gather together and with their bundle of tracts go out two by two from door to door, and then announce that they would have a special gospel meeting that night and all try and get some along to that gospel meeting on Saturday night. And then the next Saturday, and after going for a month, they would go to the next assembly. And so cover all Caracas in this way, with all the assemblies, thus cooperating and making a special effort from assembly to assembly. This is spiritual cooperation. You can only see the result of blessing in this, brethren and sisters. And we thank God for the example that these assemblies are giving. Well, in Merida, we're just a smaller assembly. But we thank God that a little assembly can seek to do the same. We have one brother that's a real shepherd there. As I've often said, a lot of our elders are good policemen. They really keep order. But this brother's a real shepherd, and we thank God that he's well supported by the other two elders. They're true shepherds too, but this young brother, he's a married man, perhaps 35 years of age, but he's well taught. He's every Sunday afternoon he has a class for any in the assembly that can go, but especially to help younger Christians. And he does this expository teaching that our brother Riddle indicated was a great need in local assemblies. He's a real teacher. Now, he's not a great public platform man, but he's apt to teach and a real shepherd. And perhaps he's the stimulus in having maintained always door-to-door activity by the assembly every Saturday and every Sunday afternoon. At 2:30 every Saturday afternoon, those that can go to the hall and stamp the tracts and pray, and at 3 o'clock they go out, maybe one or two carloads, well, there's only a few little jeeps. It's been mainly with the help of our own vehicles that this has been maintained, because they're poor, and of the 70 in fellowship, I don't think any of them earn more than $1 or $2 an hour at work. They talk about your wages here, but they're poor, and because of that they can't maintain vehicles. Nevertheless, they get out, and they've covered the whole city. It's a small city, of course. We only have about 240,000 population in the city of Merida. But they get out from door to door. And though they don't see results in many coming along to the gospel, they're evangelizing. And thank God for some that are most capable. Many of us, well, we go from door to door and distribute the tracts and invite the people along, but we haven't got the same gift that our brother spoke about of some of these. Well, there's some of them in the assembly, and there's a couple of sisters too. I delight in personal conversation to hear them speaking to the souls of men. Why they've got far more gift than I have in this. They can just go to the home and start talking, and the person can't refuse, and they keep talking to them about the gospel. It can go on for a half an hour. I'm done in a few minutes when they don't answer. I don't know what else to say. I kind of feel myself made dumb. This is a gift, there's no doubt about it. And so it is that on Sunday afternoon also, the group, some go both afternoons, other can only go one on Saturday or Sunday, but we thank God for the maintenance of this effort. Brethren and sisters, this is what we have of the example in the scriptures. Paul gave it to them. And of course, when it's a matter of pioneering work from there, we've had the joy of seeing an open door in the city of San Cristobal, a greater city of 350,000 population, where we had an exercise for many, many years. As all the time of the 30 years we've been in Venezuela, we've been exercised about the outreach, pioneering work where no assembly work had been done. And of course, the Merida assembly was such that we labored in there for many years to see the assembly planted, and then in San Antonio on the Colombian border, and now over the last 2 years in San Cristobal, because we've seen in Merida, which is a big university city, quite a number of university students saved. And one of them, when he graduated, having come from the city of San Cristobal, returned there for work, and we started gospel efforts there. But it was again college meetings. And it was a matter of going from door to door and try and get some to come along, and starting with only one stranger in and two and so forth. We preached 55 times before we saw the first soul saved. But thank God, by plodding on, the work is starting, and there are about a dozen baptized now, and they've just bought a block of land this year, so we're hoping for a future development and assembly testimony there. So it's got to be started in this humble way. We don't go in for these great efforts, just a splash in the pan and so forth. It's a matter of plodding on, and the requirements, of course, is then to lead them on, the sheep, that they may gather together and assembly be formed. That's what the Acts of the Apostles teach us. And of course, from Venezuela, the branches have gone over the wall through a woman, a Colombian, being saved at the opening of the hall that I built in Maracaibo in 1961. A woman from Colombia got saved and she returned. There were no assemblies in the whole area in Colombia where she was from. So when we came on our first furlough, Alice and I visited her. We had a few meetings and that stimulated interest so that when we went back, I started going across with one of the Venezuelan preachers. And the result was that finally in 1968 we saw an assembly formed in Sincelejo. This stirred up interest in Australia, so much so that some Australian brethren from my own state and the assemblies, and one from my own assembly in Brisbane, Australia, was raised up to go forth. And today there are three Australian couples labouring in Colombia, and they've gone further south. And the result of these activities is that they're associated with their work about 10 assemblies in Colombia now, and some of our Venezuelans that have been raised up to serve the Lord, mainly the three from our Western assemblies, from the assembly in Maracaibo, where we labored for the first 13 years when we were there. These have devoted much time to Colombia and labor in yoke service with our Australian brethren in Colombia. Thank God for this, and this is one of the reasons for progress. And as we speak about, finally, about these that the Lord has raised up, it should be a stimulus also. I mentioned there were 13. Why has the Lord raised up so many? Well, because He needs workmen, and they haven't gone from here. North American assemblies haven't sent out a worker for 40 years to Colombia. That's men workers. Some sisters have gone, but male workers, not one has gone from American or Canadian assemblies for 40 years. So the Lord has had to raise up workers from the assemblies themselves. And we thank God that they have grown and the Lord has raised them up. But it's very interesting to compare and contrast these brethren. Now, two of them, there's Señor Ildebrando Gil. He never went to school one day in his life. He had one privilege. He's the only one of that big number whose parents were in an assembly in Ciudad Bolívar in the south. But his mother died when he was about 4 or 5 years old. His father he had no work, couldn't care for him. So he was given to the care of a family there, and from 7 years of age he supported himself. Was never able to go to school, helping in work there and receiving a little salary, supported himself. Well, finally, impossible to tell his story, but in Caracas when he went there, he finally got saved as a young man in his early 20s. And that young brother was led to the Lord by the former servant of the Lord that is now gone to be with the Lord, Jose Naranjo, one of our greatest Venezuelan preachers. And that young man, he really set himself to go with and learn at the feet of this servant of the Lord. While he maintained his work, he was working in the Chrysler assembly plant. He accompanied his brother and helped him in the preaching. And finally, in 1961, the Lord called him forth to the work of the Lord. But this brother that has never had one day's schooling in his life, perhaps Peter didn't either. They said he was unlearned and ignorant men, these fishermen. But you see, they applied themselves with the scriptures at the feet of the Lord Jesus, so much so that when Peter opened his mouth at Pentecost, why, they were amazed. They said, who are these that have got no letters. They haven't studied because they realized they were men of ability. And when you read what Peter wrote in his epistle, we realize that he learned, he applied himself, and was a capable writer. And Señor Hill today is the editor of the La Voz en el Desierto, the gospel paper in Caracas. Now, I will tell you that in his writings, he doesn't often put in full stops and commas, but nevertheless, he writes, and writes clearly and very well. The other one is Cristian Chirinos. When he got saved, he had just second grade schooling. That was in 1956, 1955. He was baptized in 1956, just before I arrived in Venezuela and went to Maracaibo. So in there was a new young brother in fellowship. But when he got interest in studying the scriptures, he went to night school until he could, just in a short period, was able to get what they call his sixth grade certificate. And he got work in a furniture factory. So that's all the schooling that young man had. But he married in the Lord. He went with me to Colombia and labors there and his vacations and so forth until he was commended to the work of the Lord. Brethren and sister, he's one of our best writers. He's devoted himself. He's one of our... I have the responsibility as editor of the gospel paper that Mr. Williams started and then Mr. Sayward carried on. It's been going for 60 years. But he shares much in that work and is a co-editor of the ministry magazine also with us. And in all his writings, I can never correct them. He writes perfectly. And he's our most capable minister of the word amongst Venezuelans in Venezuela today. Had 2 years of schooling, but then he devoted himself to study to show himself approved unto God, a workman that needed not to be ashamed. But in contrast, three of the others that have been commended to the work of the Lord are university men with university degrees. But we thank God they were like the Apostle Paul, and we thank God that they're capable writers and ministers of the word as well as preachers of the gospel. But the important thing is that God maketh no respect of persons. And when a man hears the voice of the Lord and gets into his presence, it doesn't matter whether he's only got second grade schooling or whether he's a university graduate, the Lord can use them equally. And we've seen this admirably displayed in Venezuela. And they work together in perfect harmony and respect the one of the other. And the university men in the conferences where we always have a guarded platform, but the liberty to go as the Lord leads, you'll find that the university men often keep their place to let the others get up first because they've got a message from the Lord. So this is encouragement to young people. Study your Bibles and God can use you. And may you be stimulated to have increased interest in the work of the Lord, to realize that though the Lord may call you to be a laborer in your local assembly, you must be a laborer together in other fields too and have your vision afar. May this stimulate you also in the missionary meetings here in Vancouver. May the Lord bless to us his word. Now perhaps we'll just sing, as I thought of, 429 as a fitting hymn to conclude with before our brother takes over and someone closes in prayer. 429. You have a tune for that, Bill? Good. O Master, when thou callest, no voice may say thee nay. We'll just sing the first and the last verses of hymn 429.